The Orange FM.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I am one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who is not nearly as afraid of giant flies as Barbara, Adam Farmer.
I wouldn't go that far. I'm definitely afraid of giant flies. Have you ever seen those massive horse flies that come around in the summer? Yeah, I pretty much run away.
Yeah, but you don't pass out.
No, I can say that I've yet to pass out, but if I were to see one the size that Barbara sees in the episodes we're going to talk about, I might definitely get close to going that direction.
Sad news, though, today, listeners. We don't have a guest.
You are stuck with us, just Aaron and Adam. No special Amy, no special Bonnie. It's just the two of us.
Just the two of us for now. Maybe next episode we can find another cool guest. I actually have somebody tentatively lined up, so we'll, you know, keep your ears open for that.
I saw that. That can also be seen if you kind of scrape through the Bad Wolf Radio Twitter feed. You might get a hint of who it could possibly be.
Oh, there you go. Give people an excuse to check out our Twitter feed. But speaking of Twitter, we have recently gotten some good activity on Twitter. So I kind of wanted to talk about it and just say, hey, you guys, if you're listening to our podcast, if you like us, if you like our episodes, go over to Twitter and follow us. And, you know, we're actually making more of a concerted effort recently to post more things there. We post at least a couple things a day, and then also over at Facebook as well. So we've been posting a lot more stuff than usual. So if you went over there before and kind of was like, yeah, they only tweet once a week, come back. We're tweeting every day now, and check us out. Give us a follow.
Definitely. Some pretty solid content is showing up there. They're fun to read through. Some great articles out there on Doctor Who.
And today we posted a really cool fan art of the Fourth Doctor, which is Bonnie's favorite Doctor, so hopefully she checked that out.
It is an awesome, awesome image. Another thing that I found here recently is that there's even a autobiography on Tom Baker that you can pick up that was just recently released on Kindle, so that's pretty neat too.
Nice. But so before we get into our episode reviews, which we are going to do some episode reviews today, we wanted to talk about just some of the kind of newest news that's been coming out about Doctor Who. Nothing, you know, groundbreaking, but, you know, maybe a couple rumors, some leaked information about season 8 and just some general stuff like that. So first of all, Matt Smith and Karen Gillan have kind of been making the convention rounds. So that's kind of interesting. I think they've done San Diego Comic-Con before, but I think this is kind of the first time that Matt Smith has been doing the smaller conventions.
I think this might be possibly one of the best things about having him not as the Doctor, is it frees him up to start doing more and more conventions. So that's really cool that they've been hitting the trail together. I know that she is gearing up for Guardians of the Galaxy to come out. So that's cool that she's hitting the trail as well. But to have them both together, that is something special. I would love to be able to hit up a convention and see both of them on the stage together, even answering questions. That would be incredible.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to hit any of the conventions that they're both going to, but I may be going to Philadelphia Comic-Con, which I believe Karen Gillan is coming to, but Matt Smith is not. So hopefully I'll at least get to see her, maybe go up to her table and talk to her, get a picture with her, maybe even do a quick interview if she lets us.
That would be awesome. Snag some audio.
But that's not until, I think that's June, that's not until. So that we have a couple months until that happens.
Awesome.
But yeah, so they've been doing the convention rounds. I've seen a couple, you know, cool videos of Matt Smith, you know, talking to fans, signing autographs, holding babies.
Kicking a soccer ball.
I don't know when that was from. I think that might have been from an old convention.
Well, isn't he gearing up to do a I don't know if you call it a celebrity football tournament or soccer tournament.
Is he?
I think I read something about there that he is representing his country in some type of charity work football game, which it was an interesting article because it just went through his experience, his past with playing soccer and kind of what his dreams were growing up and then how that kind of didn't work out. But now he's being able to hit the field again. It was a pretty cool article.
Yeah, and we got to see some of Matt Smith's soccer skills in Doctor Who.
In some of my favorite episodes ever.
Yes. So it was a lodger, right?
That is correct.
He got to play some football.
Yes, which he pretended like he had no idea what it was, but you could tell there was definitely some skill behind the acting.
Yeah, he's a good soccer player from everything I've heard. And he did show some skills off in that video that you're talking about from a convention that he went to. But Karen Gillan, she likes to post a lot of pictures on Twitter, so she's been posting pictures of herself from the convention. She's still, you know, sporting kind of the short hair since she had to shave her head for her Guardians of the Galaxy appearance. But yeah, she had some pictures of herself in front of the Back to the Future DeLorean on the hoverboard and everything. So we posted that picture over on Facebook as well. But it's a pretty cute picture. She's looking pretty good.
I'm glad that it's kind of worked out for her. It might just be because Guardians of the Galaxy is coming out, but typically you see someone go from a role like she had on Doctor Who, and it's kind of like they're typecast and they can never find another niche to jump into. But it seems like with her jumping on board with Marvel, she's just kind of riding that wave. And so it looks like she's being able to do a lot of cool stuff. So it's really cool to see some of the pictures that she's posting from the conventions, especially that one that you mentioned on the hoverboard on the DeLorean. That's a really, really cool picture just to take a look at.
And isn't she in a horror movie that's coming out soon?
Yeah, I believe it's called Oculus. And I think that is something she was even starting to record towards the end of her tenure with Doctor Who. And I think it's just been a long time coming. But yeah, you're right. And there was something within the last 2 weeks where she mentioned that she has like a 10 to 15 minute monologue that she had to do for the movie. And it was one of the hardest things that she's ever had to do in her career up to this point. So it sounds like it might be pretty interesting.
Yeah, we'll see how her movie career goes beyond, you know, now that she's off of Doctor Who. And if it doesn't work out for her, she can always come back for the 60th anniversary special.
Right. Or she could always hit the stage with Rory. I've heard he does some great theater work.
Arthur Darvill.
Yes, yeah. Arthur Darvill.
He was in what's the show that he was in with David Tennant?
Broadchurch?
Broadchurch, right. So he's been doing well since Doctor Who as well. So I think, you know, it didn't ruin their careers.
Definitely not.
At least not yet.
Not for those two. They had a very special role.
But so Karen Gillan, you know, speaking of her, she did recently do a AMA on Reddit.
Yeah, I always think it is cool when celebrities jump on and start answering questions. Really, it's an open forum. Anything that you want to ask, go ahead and toss it out there. Just reading through some of the questions that she was asked, there was a pretty neat write-up that we posted on Facebook just on the 13 things we learned about Karen from her Reddit AMA. Number one, she mentions Cadbury eggs, which it's about that time of year as being her favorite candy, which I must agree wholeheartedly. Those are possibly the best candies, the best chocolate that you'll ever find. But then the one Doctor Who thing related that I thought was interesting is it mentioned that as a souvenir when she left Doctor Who, she took a pair of binoculars from the TARDIS. And that, I mean, yeah, that's cool. That's neat that you got to, that you get to take a piece of the show with you. But the fact that it was just a pair of binoculars, it just got me thinking, out of all the things that I've ever seen in a Doctor Who episode, be it on the TARDIS, be it out of the TARDIS, what have you, what would I end up taking with me? I haven't been able to narrow it down, but I just wanted to kind of toss this out to you because I know you have some very strong opinions in certain areas and things that you enjoy and things that you don't enjoy. But if you were able to take one piece of paraphernalia from Doctor Who, let's say that you're on it for a period of time and you just got to enjoy the ride, but then as you left, they offered you one thing. What would you end up taking?
Wow. Am I allowed to take the TARDIS?
No, you are not, because it contains much more on the inside.
I don't think my yard would be able to fit the TARDIS. I could use it as my lawnmower shed.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I
use it as your garage. Heck, I would just go ahead and live in it.
I think, I don't know, I'd probably take like a Sonic or something, you know, something that's very iconic to the show. You know, an actual Sonic that, you know, Tennant used or Smith used, or maybe even one of the more rare ones like the War Doctor's Sonic or River Song's Sonic. So, yeah, I'd probably take a Sonic. I'd snag one of those.
So that's I wholly expected you to go the costume route and snag a piece of the Doctor's costume, but I can understand taking a Sonic. I guess you could say a Sonic was part of a costume.
Now, if I was one of the actors from the show, like Matt Smith, I think if I was Matt Smith, I would just take my costume, the entire costume, and then whenever I do convention appearances, I would wear it.
Nice.
Or if I was, you know, Mickey or somebody like that, just take, you know, one of the outfits, one of the iconic outfits that I've worn, you know, so I could wear it around the conventions.
And
so,
there you go. I think you just nailed what I would take. I would take handles. Handles would be my one souvenir that I would take away.
That'd be a great souvenir. Could you imagine having that Cyberman head sitting on your bookshelf?
That would be so much fun to have that sitting on my desk. Forget all the other little knickknacks that I have sitting around. Just give me handles. Yep. I'll plug them into the wall and I'll talk to them for the rest of my days.
So was there anything else that she said in the Reddit AMA that was interesting, or was that kind of the only Doctor Who thing that she really said?
That was the only Doctor Who thing that kind of stuck out to me that I thought was interesting. The one other thing, and now that I'm even looking through it again, I can't seem to find it, so I have no idea where I read it. But she mentioned that, oh, it's the very first thing, that Matt Smith eats an entire pack of chocolate biscuits with his tea every night. I thought that was interesting, considering he is a slim and slender actor. The fact that he eats an entire pack of chocolate biscuits. Now, I'm not sure how big those chocolate biscuits are or even how big the pack is. But, yeah, I thought that was an interesting tidbit just to take away from their time together, that she knows his eating habits with tea.
And by biscuits, I believe you mean like cookies, right? That's
yeah, probably
us Americans. We call biscuits something different, but
I on the other hand, I was really hoping that there was a such thing as chocolate Pillsbury Doughboy biscuits.
It's just as simple as putting the chocolate syrup in the mix.
I'll have to try that.
So in other news, recently Mark Gatiss has kind of revealed, or maybe hinted at, I don't know if it's for sure, that he may be writing two episodes of Doctor Who upcoming. Initially, it seemed like he was talking about two episodes from the upcoming season, season 8, but now he's kind of backed off of that and said, well, it's two episodes, you know, in the future, so it could be season 8, it could be season 9. Are you excited to have him write more episodes? Are you a fan of his?
I peeking behind the curtain, just so that everybody else out there knows, because it did take me, the name doesn't immediately stick out to me as far as who is Mark Gatiss.
You don't have to admit that on the air.
I have to. I just want everybody else who's asking the exact same question that I did, as far as why should I care? Why is this a big deal? To know that they are not alone. I have to ask that same question. But this is, he plays Sherlock's brother in the BBC hit drama, I guess you can call it, the Masterpiece Theater, Sherlock.
And he's also a co-creator of that show.
Correct, yeah. Correct. So it's actually a fairly big deal, because if you enjoy Sherlock, which I don't think you can find a single person who doesn't enjoy Sherlock, to know that he plays Mycroft Holmes, And he's going to be even more involved in Doctor Who moving forward. That's very exciting. So yeah, it was definitely exciting news for me to read. Now it is one of those situations where they kind of pull it back just a wee bit and says, okay, yeah, he's going to write two episodes, but we might not see them in season 8, which, okay, that's fine. I can work with it as long as the stories are good, which for some reason, I highly doubt that they would be anything other than good. Now he has teased kind of the content of that, which would be involving the Doctor meeting Jane Austen, which I thought that would be cool if it was Smith meeting Jane Austen, but with Capaldi saying that we don't know how he's going to be, it's just kind of funny that he would meet one of the most renowned love authors out there. So anyways, what are your thoughts on that?
He's not somebody that I get super excited about when I hear he's writing an episode. To me, most of my favorite Doctor Who episodes aren't written by him or are not written by, what's the other, that author's name that everybody gets so excited whenever he writes?
Neil Gaiman?
Yeah, Neil Gaiman. You know, those episodes typically aren't my favorites. So, it's some of the other writers who aren't as famous that, you know, I end up enjoying their episodes more. So, you know, fine. If he's writing episodes, that's fine. I'm not angry about it, and not that I don't like his stuff, but I'm not super excited about it either. He doesn't stand out above any of the other writers to me.
So what would you feel about him being rumored as one of the future showrunners?
I mean, he knows his stuff when it comes to Doctor Who, and that's, in my mind, if he's the future showrunner after Moffat leaves, it's in good hands for sure. I think he, you know, he's a Doctor Who, he's a self, you know, admitted Doctor Who super fan. So, and so was Moffat. So I think it would be in good hands. I'd be completely fine with him being showrunner, sure.
Cool.
But
that's all.
The whole Jane Austen thing, you know, I think that's even more of a speculative rumor than fact. It was something that he kind of hinted at a, I think it was a convention when he was in Brazil, saying that, you know, maybe there would be an episode where the Doctor, you know, meets a famous, you know, author. So I don't think that that's for sure thing that's going to happen, but it, you know, it's just a very flimsy rumor, I guess I would say.
I would love though. The one direction I would love to see that go is if, yes, it is indeed true, and they mix a Girl in the Fireplace episode with Van Gogh. It would be really cool to see something historically done like that, because arguably one of the better episodes of Doctor Who is the Van Gogh episode. And I love the Girl in the Fireplace episode. I think merging those two and having it involve Jane Austen would be incredible.
Yeah, and some of my favorite Doctor Who episodes are when he goes into the past and also when he meets famous historical figures. So, you know, that formula works for me. So I'm always looking forward to seeing who the next, you know, kind of historical figure that they're going to feature on the show. So something else that has shown up online recently in the past few weeks is, you know, some information about season 8. So this is the part where we're going to say, spoiler alert. It's nothing major spoiler-wise. It's not plot points or anything like that. But some people that are more sensitive to spoilers may not want to know anything about season 8. So if that's you, skip, you know, the next however many, 5-10 minutes, probably 5 minutes, and you should be good and just jump straight to our episode reviews. But we are going to talk a little bit about some images that have come up online of Peter Capaldi in kind of a different outfit than we've seen him in before. He's, you know, this is the spoiler part. We get to see what his sonic screwdriver is going to look like. So what did you think, Adam, when you saw this image with him holding his sonic?
I was underwhelmed. That's
I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things that with a new Doctor, you have a new costume, new personality, and lo and behold, there is a new Sonic that you would be able to, I don't know. It's always fun just to see the transition of the Sonic from even Tennant to Smith, and then saying, okay, what's the next step that they're going to take with Capaldi? And come to find out, they're not taking any step with it at all, and it's essentially Matt Smith's Sonic.
This old thing, please, I've been rocking it for centuries.
So yeah, it is what it is, which is kind of odd, because it seemed like at the end of the Smith, this TARDIS was going to spit out a new one. But
well, keep this in mind. Well, there's kind of a precedence for this, and I know you know this, but I'm just going to mention it. The first, you know, Eccleston, he had the same Sonic as Tennant, so there was no transition there. And then when Tennant transitioned to Smith, it was the same Sonic at first, and then it got damaged, and that's why they had to make a new one. So they might just be waiting. You know, this could be, you know, the first few episodes of the season, he's going to use the same one as Smith, which makes sense. Why would he get a new one if he doesn't need a new one? But then something might happen to it. He might lose it or whatever. And then he will get his own, you know, maybe halfway through the season or even at the beginning of season two. So I kind of expect that he will get one of his own, but it might take a little bit longer than fans were hoping. I think maybe fans were hoping he'd have a new one right off the bat.
Yeah, I was expecting to have one right off the bat. So I was kind of disappointed when I saw that it was essentially what it was. But yeah, you're right. There's nothing saying that he needs to have his own. Does this possibly lend credence to the theory that he's a one-season doctor? Could we get a new Sonic when he regenerates at the end of the season after some horrible, horrible accident?
We'll see. I don't know. I'm not buying into the one-season doctor thing. I think we got him for a few seasons.
Yeah, I would agree, but I just wanted to stir the pot there. Another thing that we saw in this exact same article that showed the Sonic was a new villain, a new somewhat steampunkish monster with bright blue eyes. Did you have a chance to look at that image?
I did see that. You know, we're kind of jumping to the conclusion that it's a villain or a monster, but we don't know what the context of that is. It could just be some kind of outfit that a human's wearing, or, you know, it may not even be a bad guy. It could
Come on. You cannot say that it couldn't be a bad guy. It looks very, very nefarious. He has some evil intent.
The eyes are blue. They're not red, so bad guys have red eyes. No, I mean, I agree. It's likely that it's a some sort of a villain or something he's fighting. But, you know, he's had allies in the past that haven't looked like your typical, you know, for example, Mr. Potato Head.
Sir, permission to express my opposition to your current apathy.
Permission granted.
Sir, I am opposed to your current apathy.
Hey, he comes from a race that were villains.
Yeah, so but he himself wasn't. So I'm just saying, we don't know. Just because there's an image of this thing with blue eyes, we can't just jump to the conclusion that it's a villain. It could be somebody he's working with.
Right. I'm going to crack up laughing, though, when we get to the episodes and we find out that it's just a statue.
Yeah,
it doesn't even move. It has no personality, and it's just as the camera pans. It has no part in the show whatsoever. But
I've only seen the one image. Maybe there's been other images that have shown it a little bit more clear that kind of solidify that it's a villain. But just from this one image that I've seen, I'm not going to jump to that conclusion. Kind of looks like almost like a metallic Muppet.
Fair enough. That's I'm waiting for it to start singing "It's Not Easy Being Green"
or metal.
Or blue eyes.
And then beyond that, as we're recording this today, it is April 1st, April Fool's Day. Hopefully you haven't been duped by things online today, as I think many people have been. But
it is possibly one of the best times of the year for jumping on social media. I love April Fool's Day. It used to be something I would dread because it's like, oh no, what's someone going to do to me today? Am I going to open up my drawer to find clothes that are too small for me? But this time of year, when it comes to the internet, when it comes to social media, I love the stuff that you can dig up here. There's so many nice things.
Yeah, I think the thing that I have an issue with is it. Everybody tries to do it, and only three or four things that I see throughout the day actually were worth it. And then everybody else's was just stupid. And, like, and the people that try to trick you with like these news releases, like, oh, this is the next whatever, like, those are the ones that I get annoyed with. The ones that purposely, obviously do something that is obviously fake, but it's funny and clever, those are the ones that I enjoy. The ones where they're trying to trick people by trying to make it seem real, those are the ones that I'm just kind of like, eh, I'm not a big fan of that stuff. And I just think it's overdone. But I don't think I enjoy the April Fool's pranks nearly as much as you do, Adam.
I love them. I just love to see what people come up with. Like this morning, I woke up and I seriously watched about 15 minutes of sizzling bacon on Netflix. It was just incredible.
Nice.
But anyways, back to Doctor Who. So this afternoon, completely forgetting what day it was, I went ahead and done something I've never done before, and I just typed in Doctor Who news on Google. And lo and behold, the first article that pops up clearly states Capaldi is not the Doctor. So of course, like most headlines that are clickbait, I went ahead and just jumped right in to figure out what in the world just got announced. And then I realized what day it was. So it's a fun article just about how Peter Capaldi is not actually the Doctor, but lo and behold, Danny Pink, the school teacher that no one really knows who he is, just happens to be the Doctor. And in fact, Peter Capaldi is the Master, which I know that even in some past episodes, we kind of tossed around how maybe roles will get shifted and stuff like that. I don't think to this extent, but I just thought it was funny that there was a release on Doctor Who TV today where they talked about how Capaldi is not the Doctor, but Danny Pink is. Did you happen to see that, and did you buy into it, or did you automatically chalk it up to April 1st?
I mean, I was on guard the moment I woke up this morning, so no, I did see it. I did not fall for it by any means, but it was clever. You know, the image that they put on the site, you know, actually shows, you know, half of Capaldi's face, half of Danny Pink's, and it's kind of, you know, photoshopped, so they kind of blend together. So that was, you know, pretty good stuff. But it sounds like a theory that somebody would actually have. You know, I think there's probably people out there that already had that theory, and now they might be second guessing their theory now that it's kind of being made fun of.
Now, what if they're fooling us on April Fool's Day by posting something that everybody thinks is a trick when in reality it's actually the truth? That would be the ultimate April Fool's joke.
Yeah, that would definitely catch everybody off guard. I think if they made such a big deal about Capaldi being the Doctor and then they do a big switcheroo on us like that, yeah, that's never would happen. No way.
No, probably not. Well, no, there's no probably. It will never happen.
But it was him on Pompeii, though. Yeah, definitely.
It was definitely Peter Capaldi.
It was definitely the Doctor.
We're not going to spend the rest of the night talking about whether or not it was the Doctor.
I will be proven correct.
Just bide your time. Bide your time. It will come.
So, all right. So let's move on. We are done with the news, I guess, quotes, news. And let's move on to our episode reviews.
Definitely.
Are you excited about these, Adam? These episodes to talk about them?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to say that these episodes, I was riding a high from the past couple of episodes that we had seen. I enjoyed the Aztecs. I really enjoyed the Censorites. Truth be told, all the goofiness with their outfits and just how silly the whole story was, I still enjoyed it. And I was looking forward to sitting down. There's only three episodes within this story and just watching a fun story. I was not as pleased by the time I got 5 minutes into the episodes. It definitely kind of took a step back in my mind, and we're now back to the slower paced episodes.
Yeah, we'll get into it. But before we do, let's kind of talk about some of the kind of stats of this episode. So this is the very first series or storyline in season two. So we have gotten through season one of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
How awesome is that?
We've missed we've missed some episodes just because they aren't on Netflix or Hulu Plus. But yeah, we've made it through season one. We're on to season two. And even after these three episodes, I think we jump about six episodes before we get to the next story, which would be episode 10 of season two. So we're making good time.
Yeah. So this storyline that we're going to be reviewing today is Planet of Giants. If you are interested in watching the episodes before you hear us talk about them, pause this, go to Hulu Plus. They are on Hulu Plus. Three episodes, about 22 minutes each, so it doesn't take that long. Go watch them, come back, and pick it up here. If not, if you don't care about watching them, you just want to hear us talk about them, just keep on listening. But these episodes, original air date was October 31st, 1964. And like Adam said before, there's three episodes: Planet of Giants, Dangerous Journey, and Crisis. So that's kind of the stats. But we can kind of jump into our discussion here about the episodes. So our crew on the TARDIS, they have how do you explain this? I mean, it's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids meets Doctor Who.
Yes, exactly. That is possibly the best way to go about and summarize the episodes. It truly is very much Doctor Who mixed with Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Although definitely, well, it wasn't intentional in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Rick Moranis didn't intentionally shrink everybody. But yeah, it has the exact same feel to it. I was waiting for a massive ant scorpion battle to break out and someone to grab a chunk of a oatmeal cream pie laying in the grass.
You're giving them way too much credit on their production budget here. I don't think they would have they could barely have a fly that moved. That's why all the insects were dead in the episode, because they couldn't afford to have ones that were actually animated.
I know. How convenient was that? That it's like, huh, we are not going to be able to move these bugs, so we'll make the entire episode about pesticide that freezes the insects immediately and kills them.
But I was disappointed because the title of the episodes, or the title of the storyline, is Planet of Giants. I thought they were going to go to a planet of giants. And I was very interested. Like, I knew nothing about these episodes going in, so I had no idea. They get there, the TARDIS ends up on this planet, and they don't know what happened. There's some kind of malfunction on the TARDIS. The doors, like, open during flight, and that's a bad thing. And they end up landing on this planet, and you know, pretty quickly we realize that they're not actually on a planet. They're back on Earth in England, in contemporary England, but they have been shrunk. So everything looks alien to them because they're so small.
Now, I did enjoy that part of it, of them being back essentially where they wanted to get to the entire time. It's like they're there. They've finally arrived. If Barbara and Eden wanted to, they could have jumped ship. I mean, they have finally made it to where they wanted to go, and yet they made it there in such a form that they wouldn't be able to stay. I mean, things would not have worked out well for them to stay the size that they were. So I enjoyed that aspect of it, because it's one of those things where it's like you finally arrive home and then you find out that it just can't work.
And you pretty quickly figure out, like, they're looking at stuff and they come across like a dead ant and they come across a dead earthworm and you're like, wait, this isn't a planet of giants. You know, you pretty quickly realize that they're on Earth, and I was really disappointed. You know, I was like, ah, I wanted giants.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to have more of the Jack and the Beanstalk interactions going on with the fee-fi-fo-fums. Instead, we got that you couldn't even understand what was going on between the two because different frequencies and all that wonderful stuff that they jumped into. But as they jump out of the TARDIS and they're wandering around, I thought it was interesting that the Doctor pretty much designates that Barbara, you're coming with me, and Susan, you go with Ian. Do you think there's some sort of odd relationship forming where the Doctor is becoming very, very fond of Barbara?
What? No, I did not think that. No,
there were a lot of strange interactions between Barbara and the Doctor, like where the Doctor initially basically apologizes to Barbara for being so rude and he was being awfully kind to Barbara the entire time.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on it. I mean, I definitely pick up on Ian being a little creepy from time to time, but the doctor, for the most part, I haven't really.
Okay. So. Well, you can just leave me hanging there. That's fine.
Sorry.
I'll survive. So they do split up, and
they always split up. That seems like one of their biggest mistakes they make in the show.
I know, right? I thought it was funny though that they intentionally split up in something that they referred to as a maze. That it's like, okay, the best option would be for us to get separated. This is brilliant. Let's try this.
We get introduced kind of to the villains, I guess you could say, of the episode. And it's, first of all, we have this guy that's kind of by himself. And then some other guy shows up, and then they argue about the insecticide. And then the other guy shoots the guy.
But you completely miss the part where Ian climbs inside the matchbox.
Yes. Ian does climb inside of a matchbox, which is probably not a very smart thing to do. Although at that time, did he know that they had been shrunk? Had he figured it out yet?
Susan was telling him that they had been shrunk, and he was being very stubborn, and he would not believe the fact that he was convinced that they were at a World's Fair exhibition where everything was made bigger, and they just so happened to be actual size, when in reality, Susan was trying to convince him, no, we're actually very small and everything else is normal size. But he climbs inside of a matchbox, and I thought the scene of him bumping back and forth in the matchbox and then awkwardly rubbing his shoulder when he finally gets put down was pretty funny, actually.
That was some top-notch acting, I think, when he was in that matchbox.
As he was personally throwing himself back and forth as they were pivoting the camera to make it look like it was shaking.
And Ian doesn't really learn from his mistakes very well because, you know, you climb inside of something, you get carried away. But he does it again, you know, when he's trying to hide later on. He's like, get inside the briefcase. Like, what are you thinking?
It's our only chance.
So, yeah, he's not the brightest in this episode. He didn't learn from his mistakes there.
No, but anyways, back to the villain.
Well, were you surprised it was so violent? Like, when the guy pulled the gun, I had no expectation that he was going to actually shoot the other guy. I mean, the Doctor Who of this time was very much billed a children's show. And so the fact that he, you know, murders this guy in cold blood, to me, was a bit surprising.
Yeah, I was surprised at that part. And then I was even surprised when the other scientist, the other researcher comes out and kind of like picks up the body and you see the bullet hole, but then you also see the lifeless face with blood basically like, staining the side of the guy's head.
And they even have
looking in the camera.
They even have scenes with the shrunk crew and they're like standing in front of his dead face.
Yeah.
And it's like it fills the screen. So yeah, it's kind of morbid.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was surprising just considering the time and kind of the intent of the show.
So we kind of have three characters here, and I'm going to use their names because we're always pretty bad at not actually using character names and just calling them that guy or Frank the Aztec. So let's use their actual names here. So we have the first character we see who ends up getting shot, and his name is Pharaoh, is basically what they call him throughout the episode. And then the man who shoots him is Forrester. And then the scientist is Smithers. And that's pretty much all you need to know. Those are the only three characters other than, you know, some characters that show up later on. But for the most part, these are the ones that are important to the story. So you have Pharaoh who what was his role in this? Because I know Forrester is the guy that's financing the production of the insecticide. And he's the one that has the most to gain. Right.
Right. So Pharaoh seems to be like an outside researcher, possibly linked to the government, if I'm understanding correctly. So he's like the independent researcher verifying that all the claims of Smithers, the hired scientist, are actually correct. So Pharaoh's writing his own reports and reporting back to those who would authorize the project, which is an insecticide, to actually go to market.
Mm. And this is very much more – we're making this sound way more interesting than it actually was. Pharaoh, he comes to the conclusion that the insecticide that was developed by the scientist and by Forrester is dangerous. It is not only going to kill the pests, but it's going to kill all the bugs, and it's dangerous. So he's not going to pass it.
Right. And we come to find out later in the episode that it is as dangerous. No, more dangerous than radiation.
Than radiation. This is some pretty strong stuff.
Doctor, whatever it is that's killing these things, could it kill us too?
Well, we must presume that it can. So no eating or drinking until we've done our very best to find Ian,
So Forrester, who is the guy that has the most to gain, he's going to make all this money if this goes into production.
And he's going to lose everything if it doesn't go into production.
He's the guy that kills Pharaoh. He pulls a gun, he shoots him. Smithers is the scientist who comes out and finds that the guy killed Pharaoh. And Forrester doesn't tell Smithers the whole truth. He does tell him that he killed him, but he doesn't tell him that the test concluded that it was dangerous. So Smithers, throughout the entire three episodes, believes that the insecticide is actually good, right?
Correct.
Okay.
What I think is great, though, is the story that, which I might be jumping ahead, but the story that Forrester tells Smithers is that they, that Pharaoh actually pulled a gun and they wrestled and the gun got pressed up against Pharaoh's chest and then it was shot. And then Smithers, looking at the body, goes into a CSI mode and basically explains there's no gunpowder marks on the guy's shirt. There's no burn marks. It was shot from a few feet away. Don't try to tell this to the police.
Yeah,
so I thought that was pretty cool.
He not only was a chemical scientist, he was a forensic scientist as well, apparently.
Pretty darn good job.
As good as he was at figuring that out. But yeah, he does not believe Forrester. And I think he kind of knows that Forrester's kind of a bad guy. So, but Smithers is, you know, he goes along with it because he has a lot to lose as well if this doesn't go through. So even though he knows they're in the wrong, he goes along with it as well.
And he's very much tied up in the whole, he cares about other people. He mentioned a couple of times just like, I've done a lot of traveling, and it was while I was traveling that I wanted to go into research. So essentially he could help everybody that was struggling because of pests around the world, destroying crops and all that wonderful stuff.
Right. So we were kind of talking about how Ian and Barbara end up inside of a briefcase. So, and we're kind of, you know, moving the story along here. They end up getting carried inside of the home that they're at here, which takes them further away from the TARDIS, which we discussed with Bonnie last episode. There's always the kind of the same storyline, whereas they can't get to the TARDIS to get away. So, and that's kind of happening in this episode as well. Ian and Barbara get taken away. Now they can't get back to the TARDIS. So the doctor and Susan have to go essentially rescue them. They climb up through this pipe and get into the same area that Ian and Barbara are at. So when Ian and Barbara get in there, they come across the information about the chemicals. Barbara accidentally touches a seed that's covered in the chemicals, so she starts getting sick, right?
Correct, yep.
And but Ian has no idea, so she's getting sick. And then I guess kind of the next big thing that happens here is the doctor and Susan get up into the pipe, which takes them into a sink. And then the guy has to go wash his hands of the blood, you know, because he cleaned up the body. So now they're in danger. You know, they have to get away. Did you think it was a little convenient that there was an area under the sink that they could hide in that they didn't get drowned?
The overflow pipe. I mean, every sink has it, so it makes sense that you can climb inside of that so that you don't get stuck or washed away by the rushing water. I was more confused why the sink inside of a laboratory where you're working with all sorts of chemicals has a pipe that leads directly into the backyard.
Into the grass.
Because that's what they did. They climb up this pipe from the backyard, and lo and behold, they're in the sink in the laboratory.
This was the 60s, man. They didn't have those kind of regulations.
It just surprises me, because as they're climbing, they're like, oh, wow, this pipe is pitted and corroded. It makes perfect handholds. And it's like, yeah, because they're washing toxic chemicals down the sink, and it's corroding the pipe. But anyway,
and furthermore, why are they even in a house? Like, why aren't they at some kind of science lab somewhere in a university or something? Like, the fact that they're doing this out of their house makes it even more shady.
I was going to say, sign number one that the chemical compound you're creating shouldn't be allowed to exist is you have to create it in your garage.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure there's a lot of hit TV shows where stuff like that happens.
Yeah, so they end up getting separated. Like, as soon as they are able to find each other again, they get separated again because the, you know, this guy comes in to wash his hands.
That just sounds funny. The reason they were separated is because someone had to wash their hands.
And we did miss the part where Barbara did faint because she saw a giant fly.
Right.
The only bug that we got to see the entire episode that was actually alive, but it didn't live very long because it landed on those poison seeds.
But when she saw it, it wasn't on the poison seed. So when she fainted and Chesterton runs over to her, the fly takes off and it sounds like a stinking helicopter taking off right next to him. That was a pretty loud fly.
Yeah. So what basically ends up happening is they realize that they need to stop these guys from, you know, creating this chemical or getting the chemical out. They take it upon themselves, even as small as they are at this point, that they're going to do something about it, which involves going up and doing something with the phone, which I'm not really sure. I guess phones worked differently back then. But I guess if you just leave a phone off the hook, that the operator is going to talk to you.
I think, yeah, like even when they were calling out, every call from that house went to the operator first so that the operator was able to make the connection.
Okay, so they didn't have to hit any buttons. They basically rigged the, you know, something where they brought things up. Was it corks?
Yeah, they had the corks for the chemicals, and they propped up the receiver so that it would then connect to the operator.
So here was my issue with that. They show later in the episode that Ian is trying to strike a match. So he has this giant match. He can barely lift this match. He needs Susan's help to lift the match. But somehow these guys can lift an entire phone. And it just seems so like, I was like, are you serious? Like they can barely do anything, but suddenly they have the strength to lift this entire phone receiver up.
The power in numbers. I thought it was hilarious that it's like Chesterton's on top and he's stacking the corks. Susan is somewhere off in the distance, like sitting down. The doctor is watching everything, and who's the one that's carrying the corks back and forth but Barbara. In the state that she's in, almost dead, she's the one carrying the corks back and forth.
Yeah, but they have no idea that she's been infected with the stuff because she didn't tell anybody. I don't know why she's not telling anybody, because you would think that would be an important detail.
Yeah, but then when they get up to the phone, it's the doctor who's like, do you think the three of us can do it together? Because Barbara seems to be a little under the weather. And it's like, you didn't have any problem with that when she was carrying the 10 corks back and forth for you.
And Ian sounds so annoyed. He's like, I guess.
I guess we can do it.
But they're able to get through to the operator, but she can't understand them because they're too small and their voices don't give off enough sound, I guess, right?
Right. They're different frequency. So they were trying to match the frequency by talking low and slow, but not quite enough.
What was it that they said? Oh, I typed it out here. Oh, what was it? It was funny. I laughed at it. Put us through to police.
Yes. It's,
yeah, I was cracking up at that part.
There were definitely a lot of just like funny instances in this episode. I don't know if they were intentional, but they were definitely funny.
Yeah, so, and there's really not a lot, I mean, to this story. It really could have been wrapped up in one episode, in my opinion. And actually,
it's just when you're so small, things take longer. So
actually, this storyline was originally meant to be four episodes, and they cut it down to three. Because I think, you know, they probably saw the same thing that we're talking about, is that there really isn't much to the story. So they ended up, you know, fitting it into three episodes as opposed to four. Thank goodness.
Yes. So the phone's propped up, and the other people in the house end up finding out that the phone's picked up or isn't down, I guess. So they ended up jumping up there, and that's where the operator finds out, okay, the guy that I talked to who said he was Pharaoh isn't actually Pharaoh. So despite the inability of the group from the TARDIS to summon the police end up showing up anyways because the operator finds out something funny's going on.
Yeah, and really, if you really think about it, the operator is the hero of the story.
Absolutely.
Because if it wasn't for her, I don't know if they would have ever gotten out of there. I mean, they did the whole thing with the gas line, and they strike the match, and which was the most dangerous thing that you could possibly think of. Like, when you're only, you know, how, like, a centimeter tall, you probably shouldn't be playing with matches at that point.
Yeah, they're an inch tall, not a centimeter, an inch tall.
Okay. So, yeah, so I thought that was kind of extreme for them to be doing that, because really all they needed to do was get back to the TARDIS, get Barbara back to normal size, and she would be fine. The doctor explained it. You know, the insecticide at her size would kill her, but if they can get her back to normal size, it'll be fine. She'll be healed.
Yep.
But Barbara, being the martyr that she is, says, no, we need to stop this insecticide from getting produced. You know,
we need to save the bugs.
We need to save the world.
Yeah. Because
they even explained that, you know, it's as dangerous as radiation, and that it would seep into the soil and get into the water, and it could be, you know, enough to kill humans, right?
Correct.
So, yeah. So they decide, instead of going back to the TARDIS and leaving, like they should always do in most cases, you know, sometimes they need to save the day. But in this case, I felt like they might have been okay leaving. But they decide to stay and, you know, try to basically start a fire to bring the police. But the police came anyways. They didn't really need to do that.
Right, but they did the gas line, they lit the match, and they did what I've always wanted to do, and they put the flame directly on an aerosol can, a pressurized aerosol can, which I thought was somewhat dangerous, because even at my size, doing that with an aerosol can is a horrible idea. So as an inch tall, that's definitely not a good idea, but they went ahead and went through with that anyways.
And it blew up right in that guy's face.
And it almost put his eye out, exactly what my parents have always warned me about.
Yeah. But so the cop shows up and he basically, you know, arrests them, you know, because the scientist ends up getting the gun from the other guy. See, we're not using their names again.
Smithers gets the gun from Forrester.
Smithers gets the gun from Forrester, holds it to his back as his face has been blown up by this aerosol can. But then the cop shows up and,
tells them to turn off the gas or they're all going to get blown up.
Yep. So I'm assuming at that point that they figured out not to let him make the insecticide. They didn't really give us much of a resolution at that point.
Yeah, Smithers read the report and realized that's when he finally makes a statement that it's as dangerous as radiation.
So Smithers, we're probably meant to understand that he comes clean to whoever and lets them know not to continue production, and the world is now safe from this extreme insecticide.
He most likely left out the part where he helped to cover up a murder, though.
Yeah, I don't know. He had blood all over his lab coat, so I think maybe he went to jail right along with Forrester.
Here's what I just thought of. So he cleans up the blood from the sidewalk, okay, and it's all over his hands and all over the rag. Then he walks inside to the sink and he washes his hands of the blood in the sink that has a pipe that leads back to the garden that he just finished up cleaning the blood out of.
So he's just putting the evidence right back outside.
Exactly. All the blood is still, I mean, it's watered down now, but all the blood is back in the grass close to where he just cleaned it up from. But that's a side note.
Not the smartest villains. And I will have to say, I will definitively say that out of all the classic Doctor Who episodes we've seen so far, these were the worst villains that they've had. Like, worse than the Sensorites, worse than the cavemen. These villains were horrible.
Yeah, they didn't even know that the TARDIS crew even existed.
Yeah, it was bad. I wasn't a big fan of these episodes, if you can't tell.
I would say that I had more enjoyment talking about the episodes than I did watching them.
Yeah, I mean, there was a curiosity to it. It was, yeah, I mean, just to kind of see the progression of the series and the type of episodes they're doing. You know, I'm glad I watched them. I don't want to skip any of these episodes, but these aren't any that I'll be coming back to anytime soon.
Yeah, I would say one of the highlights would be how they kind of filmed the different interactions between the giants, the normal-sized people, and those on the TARDIS. Because although 1964, they didn't take any amazing stretches to make you understand that there's a major size difference. But yet, I accepted the fact that they were little and everybody else was big. It was just, they didn't do anything to crush my belief in that fact. So I thought that was impressive. But
that's true. That's a good point. That there was nothing that took you out of it. Where, I mean, other than, you know, it was poor set design based on the time that they're making it. But overall, for the time period, it actually was pretty well done to, you know, give you that mindset that they are smaller. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, there was one scene where the doctor is like, which is another awesome scene. Barbara tries to climb the side of the dirt to look out to see what happened to Chesterton. And the doctor calls her down because it's too dangerous. So the doctor starts climbing up, and it ends up that Barbara has to essentially hoist him up and hold him in place so that he doesn't fall, which, yeah, I thought that was comical. But there's that one scene where he's actually like looking, and you get the sense that you are looking as his character and seeing the normal sized person in the distance, which just so happens to look like a giant. So yeah, I really thought how they allowed you to believe the size difference, even with the limitations that they were working with. I mean, there was the weird cat scene. There was a weird dead body face where they were standing in front of the face. But even that, I would say it was done in such a way that it wasn't like, oh my word, what are they trying to do?
And they really wore out the doctor these episodes.
Yeah, they did.
They have him climbing up this wall. They have him climbing up this pipe. They have him climbing up a phone. And he's sweating the whole time. Like, I was literally watching it thinking they're going to give the doctor a heart attack. Like, the first doctor is going to die of a heart attack.
One of his hearts actually did go out in this episode. The other one's still beating, but he's down one heart right now.
Yeah. That's true. I guess he's got one to spare, so I guess he could have a heart attack and still keep going.
Yeah, but when he has a heart attack, that's when it's bad.
Mm. So yeah, they definitely were showing his age once again. But yeah, I think we've covered most of it. Was there anything else that stuck out to you that was interesting? Maybe that random cat shot that they had?
Yeah, the random cat shot and where the doctor says don't look it in its eyes. To me, it was kind of akin to the T-Rex scene from Jurassic Park where it's like, don't make any sudden movements. I was expecting like someone to pull out a flashlight and then, oh goodness, I forgot his name. But anyways, he's the one that's running with the torch and saves everybody. I was expecting him to come out of the distance and start running, and I forgot his name. That's horrible. Do you know his name?
What are you talking about in
Jurassic Park? Park? Yeah.
Is it like Dr. Malcolm or something?
Oh, no, but what's the name of the actor? He's also in The Fly.
Oh, Goldblum?
Oh, yes, Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
I was expecting him to show up and like save them from the T-Rex cat that was going to chase them.
Well, now we know where Steven Spielberg got his idea from, you know, with the whole when the T-Rex shows up, don't move. He was a Doctor Who fan, so obviously
he took it from the Doctor Who.
He was relating the T-Rex to a giant cat.
Yep. Don't look it in the eyes. Don't make any noises. No sudden movement. And the cat can destroy us with a single swipe of its paw.
One single swipe, yeah. So, yeah, I thought it was very comical. And just kind of the way that they filmed that scene. Because they show Ian, and then all of a sudden there's just a random shot of this cat running. And then you're like, wait, what was that? Why did they show a cat? You know, and then, you know, obviously you get the close up of the cat's face and it's, you know, it's filling your entire screen. So, yeah, definitely some interesting choices in the way they decided to portray some of these scenes.
Yep.
But all right. So I guess, that'll do it, right?
That I think pretty much wraps it up.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio. Next episode, we will try to see if we can get another guest. We might not be able to for the next episode, but we're definitely going to try to have more guests. I think it went really well with Amy and Bonnie, and so we'd like to have guests on and get some different opinions. So, and if you're a big Doctor Who fan and you think that you could come on the show and talk with us, let us know. Send us an email. If you're a podcaster, if you have experience doing these type of things, you know, let us know. Or maybe you've never done a podcast and you think that you'd be good at it. Let us know. send us an email, and we will definitely consider having you on the show to give us your opinions about Doctor Who. And as always, you can leave us...
I'm sorry, I just caught up. I just got caught up in another thing that I'm really hoping is an April Fool's joke on Doctor Who. It has to be, but it caught my eye.
Do you want to tell me that on air, or do you want to tell me after?
Arthur Darvill will be returning as the Master later this year for Series 8 for a few episodes.
Yeah, that's April Fool's. They're not going to use Rory's facade or his visage as the Master. That's
they used the guy from Pompeii's visage for the Doctor, so why
yeah but
not?
That's like a positive character, you know. You went from a good guy in Pompeii to a Doctor who is good. You're not going to use like a hero character like Rory, like a fan favorite, and you make him the Master.
I think it would be incredible. Anyways, going on, you can also feel free to jump on iTunes, leave us some feedback. It would be great just to hear what you think of the Doctor Who, our Doctor Who Bad Wolf Radio podcast.
And I have something to say about the iTunes thing.
Go for it.
Because I know we have listeners, you know. We see statistics, and we can see that we have listeners. We have pretty regular listeners that come back and listen to every episode, and there's quite a few of you out there. So when I go to our iTunes page and I see that we only have like 6 reviews, I'm thinking, come on. You know, there's people out there that like our show that come back and listen. So I would ask you, if you're enjoying us, head on over to iTunes. It doesn't take very long. Leave us a quick review. Give us, you know, 5 stars. And that will help our podcast get more visibility to other listeners out there, other people that are looking for Doctor Who podcasts. We want, when people search for Doctor Who in iTunes, we want to be one of the first matches, so people can find our podcast and we can grow our community here. So if you haven't left us a review yet, and I know a lot of you haven't because there's more than 6 listeners, I know that for a fact, head on over to iTunes and give us a review.
He's talking to you, Mom.
I will get, yeah. I will get off my giant matchbox now.
Nice wrapping it back into the episode. Also, like we mentioned, feel free to jump on Twitter. Love to see the interaction. It would be great to get it going even more. And as Aaron mentioned, we're definitely going to do our darndest to keep passing out the different articles, different images, different products. You just posted something about a Doctor Who Risk game, which I thought was incredible.
There's Doctor Who Scrabble. Or not Scrabble, yes. It was Yahtzee. Doctor Who Yahtzee, Doctor Who Risk. Yeah, so we're posting all kinds of crazy stuff over there.
But feel free to jump on there or Facebook. Don't forget about Facebook. Always feel free to jump on there, and let's get some interaction going there too. It would be awesome just to chat back and forth about different thoughts you might have on the episode, different thoughts that you might have on some of the rumors that are coming out, maybe some of the spoilers. Love all the interaction. And then as always, you can go the old school route and send us an email. Yeah, that's right. No more snail mail. Email is the old school route. Our email address is badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to send in any feedback you have, or like Aaron mentioned, if you're even interested in maybe jumping on an episode with us, shoot us an email.
All right. Well, thanks, Adam.
Why, thank you, Aaron, on this wonderful April Fool's Day.
And later days.
Later days.
See, I wanted to say it that time.
I had to say it, too.
Let's do it. No, you can't say it after me. I can just edit that out.
And good night.